appreciate Jerry Reynolds coming in off the bench, filling in for Kyle Draper, who's in Houston. You probably started your whole basketball career, right? Did you ever have to come off the bench, Jer?
Never.
Never, yeah. You're like Chris Paul. He's like, no, I'm not doing that.
No, no.
Although now he's doing that.
I'm like, I was like James Harden. I was his assistant.
Well, thanks for filling in for us here. It's a very special day for so many reasons. Chief among them, of course, is the fact that the NBA in-season tournament tips off tonight. The tournament games start tonight. The Kings still don't play one. Not that this is confusing at all, but the Kings don't have a tournament game until, I think, next Friday against OKC. But the tournament starts tonight. The Warriors-Thunder game tonight is a tournament game, and it's the only game tonight in the Kings group, which is Group C in the West. So you see, this stuff is very logical, and there's nothing confusing about it at all.
Oh, no, no. I think it'll be easy to follow. It will be for me because I won't follow it.
Not going to follow it.
No, I mean, I will follow it in a sense that each game counts on your regular season one-loss record. That's what it means to me.
Will this change your views of it? The head coach of the tournament's winning team will be awarded $500,000, same that already had been designated for the winning team's players.
Well, I'm okay with that. I mean, I certainly think if players get paid extra money, so should coaches.
Mm-hmm. Assistant coaches will share an additional pool of money that'll comprise 75% of the winning coaches total. So the league is just bending over backwards to try to get everybody on board with this. And I think what it comes down to, I heard Styles and Watkins talking about this today, and obviously they're selling jerseys, right? And that's a big part of it. But they've got a new TV contract coming up, and they're trying to find ways to make the property more valuable when it comes to TV negotiations.
Yeah, no, I understand why they're doing it and why they're trying. I'm not whether it works or not. I was not a fan of the play-in tournament or play-in playoffs. And it's worked out very well. So I know I could be wrong, but I can tell you for sure I'm not going to have a lot of interest in it this year.
I'm with you, but there's a huge, huge difference, as you know. When you have, the play-in, right? Not the in-season. The play-in tournament all led to something. It was all about winning the championship. And this is supposed to be somehow important. When we all know that, it's just we're conditioned to know the regular season in the NBA is all about winning the championship. So this in-season thing, I mean, I guess it'd be nice for whoever wins it, but no one's going to remember, are they? I mean,
I don't think for very long. I mean, you know, it's not some 5 years and I'll say, boy, who won the mid-season tournament in 2023? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it'd be one of those things not going. I kind of equate it to the college Christmas tournaments.
Yes.
You know, everybody goes in, they want to win, and they win, and then nobody remembers because they're
– It's a warm-up.
Yeah, it's a warm-up for the NCAAs.
Yeah. The NBA has been hopeful the in-season tournament can generate significant revenue in the next media rights deal, driving interest and viewership to buoy an increasingly, says they're staid or boring regular season. Good luck with that. So they're trying to get people more invested in the regular season, but it's still the regular season. Like you said, I think I'm with you on this. I'm trying to be open-minded about it, and I'll still be watching, but good luck. Another issue I have with it, Jerry, is I know some people that are football or soccer fans have pointed out to me that we have this in soccer. I think the commissioner has even mentioned that, and people love it. But if I'm not mistaken, it could be, but I think one of the appeals of that is you have teams from different leagues that don't play each other.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're in the tournament, you got to play teams you don't normally play. Oh, well, that's kind of cool. Well, you're playing the same teams you always play in this tournament.
Yeah, and each
so
game.
What are you deciding?
Yeah, and each game counts on the regular season.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost self-defeating in that regard because, I mean, it makes teams, maybe the game's more important in the long run, but from a tournament schedule, I don't know that it does. And so I don't know. It's a stretch, I think, and we'll see. But I can't imagine getting too excited about it.
Mm-hmm. It's just probably not really going to matter much. I mean, I'm curious about when they get to Las Vegas for the Final Four, right? Again, you know, we're still learning all this. I'll watch the championship game, but I don't know that it's really going to be – it'll be like, oh, that's an interesting basketball game. But ultimately, what does it matter who wins the in-season tournament?
Yeah, well, and I'm like you. I might be interested in the Final Four on a neutral site kind of thing, but I also know that after it's over, you know, it'll be ready to move on.
Yeah, because it's still secondary by leaps and bounds to who wins the NBA championship. So
yeah.
What are you even doing here? It's just kind of like a sleight of hand, like, look, this matters, because we're calling it a tournament. But and then the commercials are a little confusing because in the commercials they call it a single elimination tournament. But it's not, because you have group play and then anyway.
Well, that's
I don't
what,
mean to be negative.
That's what you get when you work with Tony Soprano, you know.
Yeah, there you go. You know, that's
you know.
Now, all that said, if the Kings were in the Final Four, would you be a little extra juiced about that?
Oh, yeah, I would. I admit that. Yeah, if they're in the Final Four in Vegas, I'd be like, you know, I know what I know and I realize, but I'd still be pulling for them because it's a win that goes in the regular season. And if they can win, that's a couple of wins. And as much thing, I'd like to see the guys make more money and the coaches make more money, especially assistant coaches.
Mm-hmm. And I would love to be dead wrong about this. I'd love for from the jump tonight – for everyone to say, man, this tournament is great. I'd love to be wrong, but I just, we'll see. I don't imagine that I am. What has jumped out to you about the regular season so far, especially in the West? I know we've talked about Wembanyama. Memphis is kind of surprising. Dallas is a surprise. I'm a little surprised by how quickly the Warriors seem to have gotten things together. What has jumped out to you so far?
Well, I think that there's two teams that have just jumped out that are better than I think I expected. Now, this is so early you can't really count much, but that'd be the Pelicans and the Mavericks. They're both, you know, weren't expected to be playoff teams, but they're playing at a high – and, you know, Zion's been great, and they're doing it without Brandon Ingram. So that's – and certainly with Luka and Kyrie, it seems to be going pretty well. I don't like their roster at all, but then Luka's great, and he's been playing probably his best basketball. So we'll see where that goes. And then on the – you know, I think on the other end, as you mentioned, I mean, Memphis is just like they've just fallen off the face of the earth almost.
Right. And I thought they were going to be able to weather the games without Ja, because in the past they've done well there, but they're 0-5. And then you look at the top of the West. To your point, Jerry, Dallas 4-0, Golden State 4-1, Denver 4-1, Pelicans 4-1. That's top four spots right there. Lakers 3-2, Clippers 3-2. It's just, and we knew this would be the case. It's just for a team like the Kings, it's going to be a dogfight virtually every single night, isn't it?
Yeah, every single night. Yeah, it. I mean, here again, injuries can always play so much. But when you look at the talent on these rosters, I mean, you know, you just simply, it's going to be tough to win 48 games again. Very tough.
Do you think that the Kings are going to need at the deadline to bring in more talent? Because they don't have the superstars, as many of them, if you include – you know, Domas and Fox's stars, because they were all league. Kings don't have as many of them as some of these teams. Are they going to need a talent upgrade at some point this year in order to compete with the best teams in the West?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think if the way it looks to me is they need more talent than they have. They're a talented team. But if your goal is to be a serious contender in the West, I don't believe they have everything they need. Now, it's not saying they can't do it, and I certainly hope I'm wrong there too, by the way.
Right.
Now, that's the bad news is, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, well, we can trade this guy and then get this star player. Well, no, you can't. The other team has some control of that.
Yeah, you don't rob Peter to pay Paul Pierce.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we could, you know, you trade a couple of guys to get Wembanyama. Well, that's a good trade.
That would be a good trade,
Somehow, I don't think
that reminds me of the early days of the Kings here. And if you listen to you probably never listened to the talk shows because you work for the team. But, you know, we were naive fans and you get calls like, I don't know why the Kings don't trade Ben Guillory and Michael Jackson for Elijah Wan. Things like that.
Well, I'd always got a kick out of it. I think about the first few years I was in the league and I'd listen occasionally. And I always remember, oh, the Kings, you know, they need somebody when Ralph Sampson was good, you know, before he had all the injuries. And they'd say, well, the Kings could trade these four or five guys because none of them are playing.
Right, right.
It's like, yeah. And why would Houston do that? Yeah. Yeah, let's trade four guys who really aren't any good and probably not as good as the guys sitting on the Houston bench.
Trade the guys that we don't need to another team for their best player.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, the thing about the NBA has always been, like most sports, it's quality over quantity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can always find the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th man. The hard thing is find those ones and twos.
That reminds me, you were just telling me a couple of days ago the story where you were talking to Elgin Baylor, and you might not want to mention the player, I don't know, but you're trying to get him to interested in somebody you didn't want, and you were telling Elgin Baylor, hey, this guy was a sixth pick. And Elgin Baylor's like, I don't care, right? I don't care where he was picked.
Yeah, actually, I was talking about it, and it was actually Joe Klein at that time. We were, because LaSalle Thompson was playing better, and so we're set there. And so we're looking into what the value Joe did have. And I said, yeah, well, Elgin, you know, he was a sixth pick. And Elgin said, nobody cares about that anymore. And I knew it.
Right.
You know,
hey.
I thought, well, it might work.
Oh, well, yeah. So that's interesting. I find myself leaning that way, too. And I found myself leaning that way, especially after the last couple of games where the Kings played really good teams in the Lakers and the Warriors. And I just feel like, man, the Kings don't quite have as much upper-tier talent as some of these teams in the West. And if you know it, and if I have some inkling there, you know Monty McNair knows it, but it's just a matter of, well, yeah, but those guys don't grow on trees.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. Monty McNair knows it better than I do, for sure, but, you know, but it's hard to do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's
and that's not a knock on what they have, the guys they have.
Because they've got really some really good players, and then they've got a couple of guys they couldn't possibly trade. And then they have guys that they wouldn't want to, even as far a slightly better player because of youth or something else. So, yeah, I don't know what, you know, basically it would come down to, you know, probably having to trade first round picks. And really with the Kings, I don't know that has much value anymore because they're a better team. You know, it's when they're a lottery or something.
What about if just spitballing here? Things aren't going great for the Bulls. What if they decide to start selling off parts? What about a guy the Kings, I think, signed to an offer sheet a few years ago, Zach LaVine?
I'm not a big fan. You know, I think he's a very talented player, kind of a selfish player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll get mine.
I was going to say ball dominant, but that's dominant, a more polite way of saying it. Maybe.
Yeah. If you could, you know, even in my mind, get somebody probably like a DeMar DeRozan, even though it's a short-term thing and not have to give up much due to his age and contract, I think in a short term he would, you know, he could make you better.
Yeah, I know a lot of fans in the summer were hoping the Kings could somehow end up with Kyle Kuzma. I don't know about you, but I'm very grateful they didn't end up with Kyle Kuzma.
I was never a huge fan. I think he's very talented. And
right.
You know, the guy, as I've talked before, the guy I really wanted was Naz Reid from Minnesota because I thought he was a perfect fit, you know, super athletic, tough, can make threes and as a backup guy. And that's what he would have been here too, but would have made – was something the Kings didn't have. But Minnesota felt the same way.
Yeah, and they were listening to him.
They were listening.
Yeah, Jared likes that guy. We better keep him. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. You want to weigh in, or if you have a question for Jerry today when we come right back, how big are the next three games for the Kings? That's next year. Drive Guys, Jerry in today, Sactown Sports. Kings are back at it tomorrow night against the Rockets. Kyle Draper is already in Houston. Jerry's filling in for him today. We appreciate it as always. Thank you for being here on this wonderful Friday. So, Jerry, with the West looking as stacked as it is, as competitive as it is, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that even though it's early November, these next three games are big for the Kings. At Houston tomorrow, at Houston again Monday, then home to Portland. Would you agree? These are very important games for the Kings.
Oh, they are. I mean, they need to kind of get on the, you know, on the winning side of the ledger, and this is a great chance to do that. And then, you know, they've got a great homestand and really need to prove this year they can win home games, which that was the one flaw last year. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, it's game time. Go win, go beat teams you should beat, and really that's Houston twice and Portland fill that. I think, you know, Portland is probably about what I thought they were, and Houston is probably a little better than people thought they would be.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little danger lurking there, that's for sure.
Last year, the Kings did a marvelous job of beating the teams they were supposed to beat. Now, that said, you may remember, oh, they lost to the Wizards. Oh, they lost to Charlotte. They didn't win every game against bad teams. Chris had the number this afternoon. It was something like 26-8, or I forget exactly what it was. But for the most part, the Kings beat the teams they were supposed to beat. And that was absolutely key to their winning as many games as they did. That may seem obvious, but one of the most surprising things I've ever seen in sports, Jerry, a few years ago, I was working at what was the A's flagship. And in 2012, the A's weren't expected to do anything. And they won the division. And one way they did is every time they played like the Houston Astros, who were terrible, they beat the bejeebies out of them. And that's how they ended up winning the division. So that was an important part of what the Kings did last year. So here's an opportunity to do it again this year.
Yeah, it is. And that is a real key, obviously. Win your home games, beat the teams you're supposed to beat at a high rate, and you'll have a great record. Now, if it's a case of where you just win all your games against bad teams and never beat a good team, then and you get in the playoffs, don't be surprised if you don't do well.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think Chris said they were, last year the Kings were, I think, 4 under .500 against teams with winning records. So there's room for improvement there. But it's a tough situation here, maybe a bit of a conundrum, because De'Aaron Fox is talking, as he did yesterday, about, yeah, I could be back this weekend. You bring him back against the Rockets, risking additional injury, which could compromise his availability and his effectiveness down the road. You'd like to think you could beat the Rockets without him, right? Rest up. We'll take care of it.
Yeah, you would. And, you know, and of course, so much of it depends on, you know, what De'Aaron thinks and doctors and all. I mean, I know he wants to play, but unless he is, you know, I'd say if you're feeling any pain,
yeah,
or tenderness, don't play.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, at this stage of the year, if it was a third game in the playoffs, be different. If he wanted to play and there's some tenderness there, you'd say, well, if you wanted to go, go.
Boy, it sure looked bad when he twisted it, huh? Because you could tell how much pain he's in and you know how tough he is. And I think, long story short, the Kings are pretty relieved that it wasn't a lot worse.
Yeah, it was amazing how he came back, you know, and played well to get the Kings into the overtime. And then, of course, from that point on, just got worse and worse, stiffer. But I thought that it really showed a lot of character, a lot of toughness on his part and desire to help in any way he could. So I think that's a real kind of a character move. And not that he needed that, but, I mean, and anybody hadn't been paying attention, that should have been it. It's kind of like Domas last year playing with a fractured thumb.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, not very many players do those things.
Right, right. That's one of the things that's so frustrating about this is that a lot of the analysts during the offseason, they were saying the Kings won't be that good this year because they were so lucky last year with injuries. And as you pointed out, well, they had injuries last year. Guys just played through them. But now with Fox getting hurt early, you know, those people are going, yeah, see, I told you, injury regression, it was bound to happen. And it's frustrating that maybe they were right about that, Jer.
Well, the Kings did have a great year in that regard. But like you say, if guys, you know, like Domas, if he had taken 40 games off, then things would have looked very different.
Right.
And that is, I mean, to me, that's why this team is a little bit of a throwback to back in the 80s or something when I first came to the league, when guys tried to find ways to get on the floor.
No.
You know, yeah.
You mean they wanted to play?
They felt an obligation. I mean, it's like, wow, I don't know what's wrong with them, but that's, yeah, they said, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, so, yeah, and I think that, you know, Coach Brown and all the basketball staff has a lot to do with that. I mean, with the camaraderie the team has, chemistry, you know, that helps, you know, guys wanting to play.
Don't you think that was also one of the reasons they won the division last year? Is you had a division where there were some older teams and guys were, you know, making sure they were rested for the playoffs. And the Kings didn't do that. They just wanted to win those regular season games, and those wins added up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, you had, you know, a lot of veteran teams, you know, well, we'll put it together to playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, sometimes you can, most time you can't.
Yeah.
You flip that switch, but the Kings were pretty much focused in all year long. And they have been this year so far. I mean, you know, they've won some close ones, lost some close ones. You know, there's no reason to believe they can't be better as a team.
A personal question, if I may, for how many years now have you been managing your load?
Probably a lot more here lately, you know.
I know. Believe me, I know.
I mean, yeah, I can get my naps. I mean, it's serious stuff.
339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Steven joins us on Sacktown Sports. Hello, Steven. You're on with Whitey and the great Jerry Reynolds. How are you?
I'm good, Whitey. How are you doing, my friend?
Good. What can we do for you today?
Jerry, you are a legend, and I always appreciate having the opportunity to speak to you, man.
Well, thank
whenever
you.
You're on these airwaves, man, it's always a pleasure. I had a trivia question for you. I actually wanted to challenge you and challenge your knowledge because I'm only 34 years old, and you've had you have that and just basketball experience. So there was a season where the Kings had multiple players who were thirds. So, like, who, not a junior, not a second, they were a third. Can you name them and tell me the year?
Now, I don't know if I followed.
The third, I think, you know, like, I think, so, yeah, you know, like.
Marvin Bagley is a third.
Yeah.
Harry Giles is a third.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
There was a year where where I looked on the floor and there was at least three or four, if not all five players on the court, were all thirds, and I found that to be very odd. So yeah.
wasn't Frank Mason? Wasn't he a third? Frank Mason the third?
Mason was a third. So, but you know, gosh, Steven, I give you your props, man. You may only be 34, but I couldn't think of a team.
I believe it was the 2018-2019 season, and I think we had three of them. It was Marvin Bagley, Frank Mason, and Harry Giles.
Yes.
And I was trying to look around and to see if there was an additional one. And unfortunately, Basketball Reference, they don't mark down the third. It's just Marvin Bagley.
Gotcha.
So I wasn't able to find the other one. But yeah, I just wanted to challenge you a little bit, man.
You won, Steven. I tell you what, you won, man. I would have never.
Thank you, Steven.
But
man, you're very welcome. I can never win. You're always a winner, Jerry. Don't ever give me that. Okay, I cannot take that evil, man.
Thank you, Steven. Appreciate that.
Yeah,
he kind of gave us half of the answer there when he mentioned Bagley.
That was something. It's kind of become a little more common to have the third as part of the name. I guess I hope, and I don't expect to be alive when we start seeing fours, you know.
What is the difference? I think I know the difference between, like, Gary Payton Jr. He's not. He's Gary Payton the second. Is that because he's not named for his dad? He's named for, like, a grandfather or something. I think that's how you get you're the second rather than a junior. If it's just you're named after your dad or your mom, I think you could be a junior. But if there's a generation skipped or if you're named for somebody else in the family, I think that's where you become the second or the third. But I could be wrong, and I further confuse you needlessly
I don't think I know is that basically that's the way they used to do kings, you know, King
Louis
the first and then the second, you know, the whole thing there. But, it was always based on the father. So I you know, when I first saw those things, I just assumed it's like when you're Frank Mason the second, they'd been a junior.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know.
I don't know that either, but I do know that the Warriors have, is it five players right now whose dads played? And I've never seen that before. 'Cause you got Steph, you got Wiggins, you got Peyton, you got Clay. And is it Trace Jackson Davis.
Yes. Yeah, his Dale yeah. Davis. Dale
yeah,
Davis.
Dale Davis. I don't remember any team that had five sons of NBA players.
Yeah, that would. I'm sure that's got to be the current record. I mean, it's getting to the stage where we might see it a little more often. And by the way, Trace Jackson Davis is a nice second round pickup there.
Mm-hmm. He is a nice player. It just, you see that more and more with baseball players, guys whose dads played. And I just think they're so much more ahead of the game in terms of growing up around that and being in that environment.
Oh, absolutely. Sometimes. Yeah, I think, you know, it's like a guy like Steph, you know, grew up around it and being around arenas, so it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be a shock to his system to
you don't
play.
Have the stars in your eyes so much. It's like, yeah, I grew up with this. Yeah. It's like you said, like JaVale McGee, growing up around here, hanging out with his mom.
Hanging his mom till I traded her.
When we come back, we're going to switch sports here a little bit because this is interesting. Why baseball says they're happy with the lowest World Series TV ratings ever. We got Ryan Hollins coming up today. We got Eddie Johnson. We got Mark Kreidler. When we come back, why baseball says they're happy with the lowest World Series TV ratings ever. Jerry Reynolds, Whitey Gleek. We got Jerry Reynolds with us today. Jerry and I were just briefly kicking around some 49er talk. Emil Fragoso joining us in the 4 o'clock hour with more on the 49ers. Jerry, you're pointing out that that 49er defense ain't what it was cracked up to be.
Yeah, that's the thing that's probably surprised me, disappointed me the most. I mean, I just assumed they'd be great there and could always put pressure on the quarterback. And you know, Kirk Cousins was under no pressure. Joe Burrow was under no pressure. And, you know, it's like I always said, a quarterback's like a point guard. You give them all kinds of space and room, they'll find open people.
You got to put pressure on the basketball. You definitely got to put pressure on the quarterback, right? Or you
exactly.
got no chance. Yeah, and the 49ers thought they had that. And now we'll see what Chase Young is able to give them in that regard. Did you watch the World Series at all, Jer?
Just a little, not much, to be honest with you. It's
and you are the all-time highest batting average second baseman in high school history of Indiana?
No.
Oh.
Just my own high school.
Your own high school, okay.
My own high school.
But still,
of course,
yeah.
Which was a terrible baseball program. And so you don't want to put any stock in any of those stats. I mean, your stats.
Your brother was a crackerjack catcher and hitter as well, right?
He was an excellent catcher. Couldn't hit a lick. Could not hit a lick. It was just, you might as well just passed him, say, he's out.
Would they have DH'd for him if they had DH'd?
Oh, no question. Yeah. No. Well, I don't know because really none, almost nobody could hit. I mean, I always say Indiana baseball. It's not a pretty thing.
Uh huh. I have to be honest. When I was playing, was this freshman baseball, sophomore baseball at Hogan High School, Vallejo, and I hadn't played a lot of baseball, and I wouldn't have a good year with a stick, but I could feel my position. And so there was one game where I was playing third, and they DH'd for me, and I have a friend, and I was asking the great John Dickinson. I asked him once. I said, would you think less of me if I told you that once in high school I played third and they DH'd for me? And he looked at me and he said, you know, I would. I would think less of you. So anyway, that's the truth.
Well, yeah.
Hardest thing to do in sports, right, supposedly?
It really is. I've told you a story about working. One of the thrills of my life was working Hank Aaron's summer league sports camps.
Yeah.
And then on days off, he'd have about one day out of the 2 weeks, and he'd come up to the camp in North Georgia. And, you know, meet the kids. And, of course, you know, I'm lucky enough to meet him and everything. And then he'd get in the batting cage. And I mean,
oh, my goodness.
Oh, my. It's just one of those deals you say, oh, now I see.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like watching PGA golfers hit and the sound of it.
That's it. I was going to say.
Same thing. You know, it's like every ball was hit on the nose, just ripped.
Yeah. That guy in there, Jay, phenomenal baseball player.
Is that right?
Yeah. University of Texas, I think. Is that right?
Wow.
Yeah, University of Texas.
Yeah, that's a great baseball program.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, World Series rating. Speaking of Texas, Texas Rangers. Hey, they finally won for the first time in team history, the World Series. But the ratings were the worst, or the lowest, I'll say, the lowest ever. Nielsen and Fox said Thursday the World Series averaged 9.11 million viewers, and that's less than the 9.79 million average for the 2020 series. That was the Dodgers over the Rays. Remember, that was the pandemic year when they didn't even play a full season. 23% decline from last year's series when the Astros beat the Phillies in six games and averaged 11.78 million. That was just last year. The thing is, I think baseball at this point, they're like, yeah, what are you going to do? I don't even think they're really that disappointed. Baseball says they had the highest ratings during those nights for any entertainment program. And they said if they can do that and if they get a long series, they're happy. They didn't get a long series, but they just don't expect to have very high ratings anymore for the World Series.
I guess. I mean, you can't make me believe they're not disappointed. You know, and I think the game, the rules they put in really has helped the game, but a lot of people have just sort of turned away from it. And then I know, like myself, occasionally I'd say, well, I could never remember what channel was on.
In the postseason, yeah, when it was on TBS or TNT or ESPN or Fox, it was.
Yeah.
It's like, baseball, I'm trying. No one wants to watch you. I'm trying to watch.
Yeah.
And I can't figure it out.
Yeah, if you're going to be on one yeah. network, it makes it better. Well, anyway, so it's, it's a bit disappointing, I think, for baseball. It's kind of like NASCAR's went the same way, just straight down in the last 10 years.
But I have to think if baseball really did care about the ratings, they wouldn't, for example, start the World Series on a Friday night. I was talking to Gary Gerald out there because that was the night of the Kings home opener against the Warriors and the World Series was starting. We're like, wait, game one of the World Series on a Friday? What are they doing? Again, I think they realized this is bad, but it's the best we can do. We don't really care.
You know, in some ways, I kind of think they almost go back to the 50s and play their games in the daytime.
Oh, that would be great.
You know, I think you wouldn't get less of an audience and you might even get more. And anyway, that's old school all the way there.
Yeah, I just think the playoffs now, they just last so long playing into November when you played 162 games. And maybe I'm just, you know, steeped in the way it used to be. And maybe I have to change with the times. But that's too many games in the postseason. If you're going to play 162 games, what do those games mean if you're starting everything over and you got so many teams in the playoffs?
I'm listening to some baseball experts, which I kind of agree with them. It's like, well, to play the 162 game schedule, you build your roster a certain way, and that lead helps you win the 105 games or so far. But then the time you get to playoffs, you know, it's maybe not about starting pitching as much as relief pitching and depth of the pitching staff or so forth. And so all those things kick in, and then you get days off that you wouldn't get in the regular season. Mm-hmm. So a team really can rest their stars, pitchers.
But, Jerry, I used to feel like, what are they doing? They're so dumb. Baseball doesn't understand. And I really do think now they do understand. And I'm not sure the people that run baseball, a lot of them I don't think really like baseball. I don't think they really care. They feel like, you know, we're making money on this. This is the best we can do. This is where we are. How about this? I don't agree with this. A guy from Fox said, it's a good thing for the health of baseball to have new pennant winners and new champions, new teams playing in the World Series. You don't want to be the same market and the same brands every year. I know a lot of people agree with that. To me, I mean, it's one thing if you have like one team in the World Series that's an upstart, but you got to have like your Dodgers and your Yankees. Just, I think people are more interested in it that way.
Oh, I do too. I mean, I think it's always been that way when you've had because fans, you know, the Yankees, you might love them, you might hate them, but you care.
You care. Yeah.
Or, you know, going back to UCLA basketball back in the wooden days, or the Dukies more recent.
Right.
Well,
it's a strong brand.
A strong brand. And, you know, so I think that makes all the difference. And I think, you know, no, I think it's just the opposite. I think, you know, who wouldn't? I mean, if the Dodgers were playing the Yankees, say, this year or Boston, I guarantee the ratings would probably be twice what they were.
Yep. I wouldn't be surprised. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Rob joins us on Sackdown Sports. Hey, Rob, you're on with Whitey and Jerry Reynolds. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's everybody doing today?
Good. Happy Friday.
Good, Rob.
Okay. Happy Friday, Whitey. I'm glad you're back on the air. You're doing a great job with your team there. I appreciate you, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and Jerry Reynolds, the legend. Good to talk to you, sir. Been following you for a long, long time.
I've been around a long, long time.
You have. Hey, you did a great job here. And I wanted to just do a shout-out real quick, Whitey, on Bruce Bochy. We kind of just skimmed over him. Hey, it's the worst World Series ever watched, you know, and yada, yada. I heard you say the Rangers have never won a World Series ever until this guy took the managerial reins. I mean, he brought the first World Series to the Giants and, you know, and then two more. So, I mean, just a legendary manager and his Padres. So just I wanted to call in as a lifelong San Francisco Giants fan. Obviously, Bruce Bochy, and I'm thinking, man, well, what a legend! What a manager! So, just shout out Bruce Bochy and great job. And yeah, and baseball's kind of kind of boring, you know, our attention span nowadays and things, but we'll still love the game and catch it when we can. And obviously when the Yankees or Red Sox or Giants and Dodgers are in it, it's going to be better with, you know, instead of Diamondbacks, Rangers. But shout out Bruce Bochy. Let's go, Kings. Light the beam. Let's have a great season. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you, Rob. I'm glad you brought that up. Boch is the best. I mentioned that Mark Kreidler is going to come on the show a little bit. And Boch and Mark Kreidler. Boch was a player. Mark Kreidler covered him. And working with Mark, there were times when we would try to get Boch on. And when sometimes it wasn't convenient for Boch, but because he knew Mark, he would always come on because he's a great manager, but a really good guy too.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Really good guy.
You know, he's one of those guys, rare, as I pointed out, you know, I mean, he's won world championships two different places. Well, that shows you the value of a manager. You know, it does make a difference. You know, the Sparky Andersons or Tony La Russa's, I mean, they go different places.
Both leagues. Both those guys and Boch won in both leagues.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and almost invariably, the teams, even if they're not championship, they get better. And so, you know, it's not analytics, it's leadership sometimes.
Here's a piece of trivia. Bruce Bochy is the first guy to win a World Series for a team that he had beaten in the World Series. Because 2010, Giants beat the Rangers, and now Boch winning a World Series with the Rangers. No one else had ever done that before, for what that's worth. So there you go, Rob. When we come back, have you been following this this Raiders saga at all? The Raider coaching?
Yeah.
Will the next coach of the Raiders be Jim Harbaugh? Why that could be trickier than it sounds when we come right back with Jerry Reynolds in today. It's a Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports. Emil Fragoso joining us next hour here, Drive Guys, with Jerry in today. Emil with the latest on the 49ers. Big week for the 49ers. But did they do enough? We'll see what Emil thinks. And I think 49er fans could use a week off, Jerry, to just, you know, last few weeks have been rough. Just a week off to kind of regroup and then get back at them next week against the Jags.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, but it's the NFL and a lot of good teams. Everybody gets beat, you know. I mean, the Niners still could be the world champions. I mean, and I think fans should keep at them. They clearly could be, as could seven or eight others.
Sure. It's just so discouraging when the 49ers get off that 5-0 start and look like, well, they're certainly one of the best teams, if not the best team. And then the last 3 weeks, like, what happened? Are they the same team? I think it's a matter of injuries, and then everything started snowballing. They can't run the ball, and they can't stop the run. And that's what the 49ers do. So I think there's been kind of an identity crisis with the team and with their fans lately.
Oh, I agree. I mean, they're my second favorite team, so I watch them all the time. And I just really thought probably the most talented team in the league, what little I knew. But I knew they didn't have a Patrick Mahomes on their side, but which makes a huge difference.
Jerry's a Chiefs fan. You probably know that.
Can't help it. As I've said, I, you know, lived in Kansas City for 9 years, and I've always been a front runner. So it just makes perfect sense.
Now, isn't your son also a Chiefs fan?
Oh, he's a true one. And he's actually really likes them when they're bad.
Really?
Yeah, I turn on them. So.
That's right.
So no,
you don't have time for that.
No, he's an actual fan. Huh. You know, I mean, I come and go.
Depending on, are they winning? Okay, great.
Yeah.
I'm on board. The Chiefs and Raiders, is that even really a strong rivalry anymore? It used to be one of the hottest rivalries in sports.
Yeah, you know, certainly used to be the rivalry, really. They truly hated one another and probably some good reasons. But
kind of a shell right now.
Yeah,
right?
I would
it's
think
like,
so.
Hey, that used to be a rivalry. It doesn't feel the same.
I'm sure, you know, the Raiders would like to think it is, but I'm pretty sure the Chiefs, let's go play the Raiders.
The Raiders, of course, firing their head coach this week. There's been some speculation that when Mark Davis starts looking for a head coach, presumably he's already started looking, Jim Harbaugh, who used to be a Raiders assistant, could be a realistic candidate. It's interesting. I just mentioned this to Jerry, and Jerry said he's probably right. He said, what'd you say? You said he's about Jim Harbaugh and the Raiders? He's too smart?
Yeah, I said, I think Jim's too smart for that. I don't think he'll do that. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back to the NFL at some point, although I think he'd be wise to stay where he is, you know, and contend for championships at Michigan. But I think, you know, the Bears, where he played at some point, are going to make another run at him.
He is just at least in terms of doing interviews, he's one of the most unusual guys I've ever interviewed. And maybe some of that is just I didn't ask him the right questions. But I remember one time I was asking him, as I told you a moment ago, I asked him something like, do we not appreciate the importance of special teams yardage? And he said, I don't know, do you or not? And like okay, coach. Yeah. So he's just not always the most cooperative interview. And I've heard other guys interview him, and they've had similar issues with him. So kind of a strange duck when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah, you know, it seems like a lot of the great coaches, you know, kind of find a real joy in that a little bit, like Bill Belichick, Popovich, Greg Popovich. He's got a little bit of that, you know, just jerking everybody's chains because they can.
Yeah, I think some of it is trying to make you earn it, which is okay, that's fine. But anyway, it could be more complicated than you think if Jim Harbaugh is interested. You're right, there's a good chance he's not. But here's the thing. Two league executives and two high-level NFL agents Wednesday, each posing some version of the question that will orbit Harbaugh on the Raiders. And here's what people are wondering. If the NCAA investigation leads to sanctions against Harbaugh, would Roger Goodell step in and uphold those sanctions on the NFL level? In other words, if the NCAA says, with the sign stealing and everything, oh, there's, you crossed a line, it was illegal and it was wrong, would Roger Goodell punish the team that hired Harbaugh? Because I think they actually did this years ago, 2011, with Jim Tressel when he left Ohio State and was hired by the Colts. So I'm not saying they should or they shouldn't, but I'm just saying a lot of people look at that and go, huh, Roger Goodell could actually step in and uphold sanctions on the NFL level if somebody hired Harbaugh.
I don't think it makes sense, personally. I didn't in the Tressel stage either. It's like, yeah, he was punished by the NCAA. Well, okay, he's not in the NCAA. He's in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And with Harbaugh, of course, the Harbaugh thing, I know I'm going to take another stance on this. Like, in trouble for scouting? That's really what we're talking about. It's like, well, they say stealing signals. Well, that's what probably every other coach is doing, but we don't know about it. They should be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in every other sport, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. Steal signals and plays and stuff. I mean, as a former scout as well, that's what you really were looking for. Mm-hmm. You went to see a team play, say, yeah, that's a signal for this play or that play.
Is it different in college, JR, though?
It shouldn't. I don't think it is. I mean, you know, I'm not saying they didn't maybe do more of it, but and they do. I think they do have some kind of a rule, which makes no sense. That's my point. Mm-hmm. Is like, wait a minute, you got these multi-million-dollar programs, and you don't want your teams to be able to scout one another? I mean, are you kidding me? You think they couldn't sneak into a 90,000-seat stadium?
It's incumbent then upon any team to make sure that they're not doing things that other teams can pick up?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. And so what you're telling me is you need to indict yourself.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, I said, like when I was a coach in junior college, it's like, well, you could do. I mean, they had rules, but they had no apparatus for punishment, no investigator. So, mm-hmm. You know, the only way you get in trouble is you turn yourself in and give them the evidence.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm suggesting is that it's not – if Jim Harbaugh and his staff, if they were scouting or stealing signs, it's not their fault. It's whoever they were stealing signs from allowing them to do that. You gotta have your house in order to the point where it's not so easy to steal your signs.
That's what I think. Yeah. I mean, it's like in baseball. Well, you're trying to get what the signals are, and that's why they have variations to keep you from stealing their signs. And then in basketball, I know for years, you know, you had different ways trying to cover what plays were, mm-hmm. And then you'd make adjustments as the year went because people knew them so well, then you'd try to make adjustments.
I remember when I was first covering Kings games, and I remember sitting behind, did Kevin Lockery coach the Miami Heat at one point?
Yeah.
I remember sitting there, and you guys would run a set, and as soon as you ran in your set, he was telling the team, hey, it's going to Wayman. Of course, it went to Wayman a lot.
Yeah.
But they knew as soon as you went into your set, everything that you're going to run.
Yeah, you know, that's what I always say. That's why any good team or any team over a period of time, they're going to scout you. You're going to have to do some things different, you know. And it's like now the Warriors know the Kings can do something different on Steph they'll be a little better prepared for it. But I always remember the time Scott Skiles was a point guard at for the Magic, and an Indiana guy. I knew him pretty well. Mm-hmm. And we were playing, and he was yelling at me. He said, "Hey, Rodney McRae doesn't know that play." You know, and I said, "No, he messed up. Why don't you tell him how to run it?" And Scott said he did, and you know, so he of course he was, you know, I always say he was just a brilliant little player, tough minded, but he knew our plays better than our guys did.
Didn't you one time try to run a play for LaSalle Thompson and he kept messing it up?
It's funny. LaSalle's the best guy ever, and he'd. Was kind of wanting a little more, you know, attention to himself. You know,
want a couple touches.
Yeah, Eddie gets shots, Reggie gets shots. You know, I'd like to have. So we put a play in for him, called it Texas, which would be mm-hmm. where he's from and or played college. And so we start off the game with it, and he messed it up. And then so we,
a play for him.
For him. Yeah. And then we ran it again. He messed it up again. And I remember calling timeout, and Tank says, "I don't want any more plays. I don't want any plays."
Was Eddie on that team?
Yeah.
I wonder if Eddie will remember that.
I wonder if he will.
Yeah. Eddie Johnson says he's going to join us in the next hour. Coming up, Emil Fragoso of Sacktown Sports 49er Insider. Ryan Holland still to come. Mark Kreidler. And we got Jerry Reynolds rest of the afternoon here to Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.